Time is 12 minutes past the hour of 8. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. We're looking at cheesy funeral songs. David, we're not talking about this as a conversation, but right. Why do we find funerals so funny, psychologically speaking?
I don't think it's just you, Howard.
Oh, you think it is just me?
Yes. Yeah. Funerals
so there's
funny.
We find funerals funny.
No, but I do think for me when we, you know, when we have very, very stressful situations, upsetting situations, you know, it's almost like, you know, they're so upsetting that we want to, like, you know, that idea of cognitive dissonance. We kind of look, we want to kind of defend ourselves against the pain. We want to kind of help us to, you know, to get through the situation. So sometimes we do find ourselves having inappropriate thoughts.
Define inappropriate thoughts at a funeral.
Well,
sorry, Karen.
Thinking about the buffet afterwards.
Zanati. And if you're able to Instagram it or not.
Exactly. Even selfies, because another thing.
No, Zanati.
No, you're not just selfies at a funeral. No, Zanati.
No, like I saw this other woman taking a picture of her outfit at the funeral. And I was like, and also I did look good as well. And I was like, should I?
Did you, Zanati? Did you?
I didn't, but the thought just did.
No, but hold on. But why can't you just take the picture before you get to the funeral? Is that appropriate?
Some people do, but a lot of people take it at the funeral because they want you to see that they were at the funeral.
Right.
Who wants to see that you were at the funeral?
It's more believable. That you were actually at the funeral.
And I don't know whether.
And there's also a caption, we are celebrating so and so. You see? I don't know whether
to live or die. Not appropriate to ask that at a funeral,
no.
Right?
No.
But this part is, this part. She's out of my life. I suppose no widower should play that at a funeral. Yeah, it's like that's rude, hey? It's out of my hands. Like, you know what? I don't know whether to laugh or cry, live or die.
Isn't this song more appropriate when you get your get?
Oh, David. That's not
just
funny.
Sorry.
Really, nobody finds that funny. Nobody.
Howard, I'm blaming you.
What, I've caused this.
Yes. No, I'm just deteriorating as a person. As we speak.
That is true. That is true. Karen says, what about beat it? No, Karen, really. All right, time is 8:15. All right, we've actually got to change the subject. We can't talk about funerals all day.
No.
I really could, though. It's like Meghan and Harry. I can talk about it all the time.
Howard, we've got to move on from, well, I suppose we're not going to.
It's from
to be,
what?
From Meghan and Harry.
Okay, let's just get to this one part here, and then we're going to talk. Jonathan says, hi Howard, we heard Simcha Lena at the concert last night. This is a real superstar, world class indeed. He was on the show a little bit earlier, played some of his music, really, really awesome. And I hope you enjoyed that interview with Simcha Lena. We will be podcasting that. All right, David, time is 8:15. Let's just talk about something a little bit more serious than death, which is matric. Lots of kids, of course, having just received results. Lots of kids going into matric. And I think this year, it's almost worse because the results and starting of the new year came so close together. Mm. It almost is a way to add to the anxiety. Mm. I know lots of parents very worried about their kids going into matric. How do they deal with the stresses of it? How much emphasis do they put on it? Go and learn. This is so important. But at the same time, helping them keep perspective. Help us out here.
I think that's the most important thing, Howard. I think really it's so important to help our kids, our young adults, to keep perspective. Because, yes, is matric important? Yeah, sure. At, you know, the end of year, you know, results are important as far as...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I just need to interrupt you.
Yeah,
please, can you talk about something more interesting? Also not Harry and Meghan. And they've given us like six or seven exclamation marks.
Oh, I thought there was going to be some suggestions.
Oh, no. If anything wants to make me go back to talk about funerals and Harry and Meghan, it's that SMS. But anyway, sorry, David, we were talking about matric, and now this person has disturbed us.
No, not at all, Howard. But seriously, I think for me, you know, it really needs to be kept in perspective. The idea of matric, the word matric, it just creates so much anxiety. You know, just hearing about it. And I think for me, we do build it up. Matric year. This is the year. This is the most important year. And of course, you know, if we're going to say to our children or give them the impression that when you sit down in matric and you're writing an exam and your life, your future really depends on how you do in these particular exams, I mean, that would create anxiety for anyone. So, and high levels of anxiety. And what we don't hear is the huge emotional and psychological fallout that occurs every single year amongst our youth. That the amount of anxiety, the amount of depression, is very, very high. And I think we really need to, think about how to do things in a healthier way from an emotional point of view. And I was really, really, impressed to see that, this year King David Victory Park, High School decided as a group, the matric year decided as a group not to publish their results as individuals. And I think for me, it's very difficult because I think for those people who did really well, it's very nice. And obviously, you know, you get a lot of exposure when you advertise that you got 6 or 7 or 9 distinctions. But it's so mature, such a mature decision that was made that...
In fact, I got a message that the Yeshiva College kids did exactly the same. Mm. They asked the school specifically not to focus on it. The problem is it's almost this double-edged sword because for the schools themselves, it's actually very important marketing-wise, getting their message out that they can achieve these results. So that adds, it must add, even if the schools don't want to add pressure to the kids on some level, it has to subconsciously add that pressure.
It does, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, imagine that your results for your exams was published in the paper. I mean, that's exactly what's happening.
Well, that's what it is.
Exactly. And the amount of, you know, anxiety that causes on its own is huge. So I think the idea of, you know, publishing the general results, the school got X amount of distinctions, X amount of B's, varsity entrances. Absolutely. I think that can be advertised. But to see who is really not there rather than who is there is where the difficulty comes in.
But that doesn't alleviate the point that I was making that on some levels, whether the schools want to place pressure on the kids or not, they are because they know that they, the school, are judged by those results.
Absolutely. And I think the school is, the schools are, and the education system is very
flawed.
Flawed. Because, you know.
Where did this business of publishing your matric results come from? It has to be an apartheid government. No, because nobody else could have been so cruel and so dismissive of the individual.
And when you think about it, it's actually archaic now. Because, you know, in those days, in our days, Howard, you know, we couldn't just go onto the internet.
But you didn't need to. Your school has your results. You don't need a public thing of results any time before matric. You can get your results in the same way that you get them in grade 11.
Absolutely. It's completely archaic and backwards. And so I think for me, you know, it's that... this is how we do it, so let's just carry on doing it. And I think there needs to be, you know, thought around this because it does have a significant fallout. And our youth pay a huge price emotionally, psychologically, you know, during this year. So I think for me it is very important when one is going into matric to I think again, as we said, number one, keep perspective.
Right.
Number two, is to be very, and in that perspective, to be very clear that school really only taps a certain type of intelligence. And to make, and some children do so well at us, you know, in school.
But isn't that making excuses for our kids?
Not at all. Not at all. I think it's
because
really
some of our kids actually can do well if they actually just sat down and bloody well did some work.
Sure.
Now, my problem with this is, how do you balance that? How do you tell a kid, sit down and do some work? This is important.
Right.
While saying to them, you know, if you don't do so well, it's not that important.
Right. So I think for me, again, it sounds like a cliche, but the idea of let's do your best. And I really have a, you know, people say, well, anyone can do anything if you put your mind to it.
Oh, rubbish.
I don't agree with that either. I think you're trying to do maths.
It's the most irritating lie that the woke generation is selling our kids. We can't do everything. I will never be an Olympic sportsman. Never. No matter how hard I trained, I would never be an Olympic sportsman.
And I would never have been an actuary. Mm-hmm. It just would have been a disaster.
Right.
But where are subjects like problem solving, creativity, critical thinking? No one got a distinction for entrepreneurial skills. So these are the kind of things that aren't really tapped at school. So to keep in mind that, and I think of, you know, some of the most successful people that I know that I went to school with were not very good scholars. We're not very good at school at all. But yet when they got out into the world, they were able to pursue things that interested them that they couldn't at school. So I think that's the kind of perspective that we need to give our kids, that try your best. Does the system suit you? Does it not? You still need to put in an effort. It is important. But this is not going to determine your life success and your life happiness. And I think the other thing with matric is, this is a marathon, not a sprint. Mm. And to really help your children to maintain a steady jog, not a sprint throughout, because it's a long year. And I think it's so important that we help our children to find a balance between work, enjoying the last year of their school career, and making sure that there is this kind of steady working kind of ethic over the year, and not kind of getting to a place where one's, you know, comes to exams and one feels completely overwhelmed. Mm. So I think that is important, to try and from the beginning have a game plan. Sit down with your young man, your young woman, and sometimes they don't want to talk about it, you know, leave me alone, I'll do it myself. Just to try and have a game plan before the event. So really sit down and say, how do you plan to do the year? Or even,
well, I've got another idea.
Sure.
And we've started discussing it with my daughter, and I'm interested to see actually how it goes, and I'd like your thoughts on it. What we've said to her, now she's not in matric, she's in one of the younger years, she's very, very bright and is not achieving academically the marks that she should. And what we said to her is, you've got to look at yourself as so-and-so, whatever your name is, and let's say the child's name is David, as David Inc., right? You're the CEO of David Inc. If I'm the CEO of a company and I need to have a certain amount of knowledge, I need to make sure that I acquire that knowledge. So if I'm going into a meeting and I need to understand what the legal options are, I'm going to go to my lawyer and I'm going to say to him, explain this to me. No, I'm sorry, I don't understand it. But why this? But why that? I'm going to make sure that I have that knowledge. To some extent, we've got to empower our children to say they are themselves Inc. They are the CEO of themselves. So instead of saying, you know, yes, we'll give you extra lessons and this, rather give them the control to say, you need to demand a lesson on that. And you need to make sure you need to know what you need to know. People actually work for you as that person, and you need to gain everything you need to gain. There's no excuse for saying, you know, well, they didn't come to a lesson today, so therefore I don't know the work. Well, you going into that meeting without the knowledge. If you were in business, you'd send a sharp email and say, you didn't pitch to that meeting. I need this information. Please let me know when you can make that up.
And I love that way of thinking, because again, that's about a life skill. It's about saying, I can empower myself, when it comes to matric, even at school, as you say with your daughter for the younger grades, it's very much about saying you're in control, and that, yes, actually, you're not the expert in everything. But if you're not, get people who are, acquire knowledge, get assistance. And I think for me, that's such an important message to give to children that they can take into their world, that you're not going to be an expert on everything.
But nor do you want to. A good CEO hires people either smarter than they are or has more knowledge.
Absolutely. So that, as I say, support that absolutely, because it's really about that is a life skill that your daughter could take out once she leaves.
All she's got to do is buy into it. We're not there yet.
Exactly.
We're only at part one. It's 8:27. I'm Howard Feldman. Time is 8:34.
Or a psychologist.
Or a psychologist. Exactly right. Chatting to David Abramson, psychologist in private practice. And we are speaking about the stress of matric particularly, but of course also the same anxiety is felt by kids in many different years.
Yeah, well, I mean, the pressure, it always surprises me, and not in a good way, the pressure that kids are under these days, and it's not only in
matric. Well, I want to stop you on this these days. If you look at your practice now, and if you look at what you're seeing now, and what your colleagues are seeing now in early 2020 or whatever it is, compared to 2010, compared to 2000, is there a massive difference in anxiety levels?
Huge. And we've seen a huge escalation. But again, I think we don't want to simplify the situation and just say it's the stress of school.
I don't think it's simple at all.
We can talk about social media. We can talk about kids being exposed to way too much information too soon. But I do think for me, it definitely the pressures of school and the pressures of getting out there and getting the best job and getting into the best universities or technicons definitely play a role. So, but one of the very, I think, useful things, and I think it is also a life skill that we can give to our children, is to plan the year. When you know and you sit down at the beginning of the year and you know what's coming when, that is, obviously from your coaching, but I find with young people that if they can, look ahead and things are predictable and consistent in their, in their lives, so they know when the exams are coming, they know when the holidays are, it's very, very important, because then there is a structure to work within. And I think for me, I find that the kids that I work with found that very, very useful. Because
so what do you suggest? You sit down with your kids and a year planner.
And get a year planner. And it's also a life skill. And start to put in, for example, when exams are, when are tests.
It's a great idea.
And
such a simple idea.
Such a simple thing. Mm. But every day you know where you stand. You have got proximity to your world, which is, and if we kind of take it to a more practical level, we all want to know where we stand. We all want to know where we are in relation to other things. And it's so important that we know where we are in relation to our year and into the obligations and
And it's so interesting, because again, going back to my business CEO analogy, any business does this. Every department sits down and says, right, how are we planning the year? What are the events? We plan a budget. Every department in every company, and every company does this. We should be instilling that in our kids from a very young age.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a real life skill. And obviously things change, and we also help them to adapt to change, and maybe realizing that certain things do occur that aren't predictable. But absolutely, that's the whole point around educating your children. It's not only about marks. It's not only about percentages. It's about instilling life skills. And unfortunately, those life skills are not graded, yet are, maybe I would say, some of them are even more important than algebra and knowing what different clouds, type of clouds there are in the sky.
Well, Melinda says, my shock is the anxiety in primary schools, not to mention all the meds. The pressure seems to be entrenched from even before grade one.
It's an epidemic. It really is a problem. And I think
But is it us or is it our children? Are we causing this anxiety for them before they go into grade one? Or is it just in the atmosphere?
There are so many factors to this. I do think for me, we do it's sometimes inadvertently talk up the next stage of life. Oh, you're in nursery school. Next year is big school. You know.
Yes. In fact, my kids all say that. They spend every year in school saying, you know, you think you can coast along now, but wait until next year. And if you don't know this, you are not going to manage next year.
Right.
And then next year comes, and then it's about the next year.
And this grade 11. Grade 11 is more important, or as important as matric. I think for me, it's really going to take a very brave educators and parents to stop the cycle, to actually say number one, change the system, and then giving messages to our children that actually, you know, as we were saying, we need to keep this in perspective. We need to put in effort. We need to try our best, but let's keep perspective on what this means in life and what's important. But I think again, there needs to be a joint team effort from all sides. And as you said earlier, one of the difficulties is that schools, it's about numbers. And how do you attract numbers? By saying, we give an amazing education. And these days, really, it's about how many distinctions did you get?
Although I must tell you, what was interesting is we spoke here in Atrai with a number of principals from various schools across, mainly the Jewish schools, plus one or two other non-affiliated schools. And I have to say that although there were schools that all did exceptionally well, each and every head reinforced the fact that, yes, our results are good, but what is more important, and whether that was just a line or not, it was recognized. The fact that they said it means it's important enough to recognize that what's more important or as important is the product of the school. What are these kids who are they? What kind of people have they become when they leave school?
Absolutely. I think there is a push in that direction. I really do think that our educators are trying to push in that direction. And it is a slow process. But, you know, in the end of the day, you know, at the end, we still look at the marks. We still see that as kind of the benchmark. That's what's, you know, as we're saying, is publicized. That's the thing that kind of, how many, you know, when we talk about how schools are, how, you know, the value that they add, we talk, how many distinctions do they get? You know, we don't talk about what facilities or what other skills has your child acquired, you know, during your, so again, it's this whole mindset about valuing that, you know, that whole idea of distinctions and how many university entrances we got. So again, it is going to, and I do have sympathy for them because we all stuck, parents.
Yeah, because it's a cycle. I don't know how you break, because how do you, if the school doesn't get those marks, well then they're not going to attract kids. Everybody's fighting for a market share right now.
Absolutely. Well, I do think it's about expanding one's offerings at school. You know, that it's not just about, you know, these, you know, 5-10 subjects that you can do, but that there's hopefully more choice.
Well, I think what it has to be, I'm sorry I'm interrupting you a lot today, but almost what it has to be is, okay, the assumption is that your marks are good. Otherwise, you don't have a right to play in this arena of private schooling, for example. So yes, we know you're going to get the distinctions per child. What else now do you have to offer?
What do you offer your child? What are you going to give to my child when they leave? Are they going to know plan their day? Are they going to know how to time manage? Do they have any creative skills? Have you taught them how to be resilient in life? I was actually thinking about the other day, you know, being holiday. I would have loved, Howard, and I know this sounds might sound really strange. I would have loved in my early years, I'm not obviously talking about late in life, in high school, but I would have loved to have a lesson on folding clothes, packing a bag. I would have loved to have a lesson on the practical things.
I'm horrified that schools don't teach body language, nonverbal communication. I think it would do away with bullying. I think it would give us life skills as we enter a workforce. I think it would do so much good, but yet we don't.
Absolutely. I think it's really about thinking about what we use in life when we leave school, and when we think about it, ironically, you know, what we use when we leave school, we don't really take a lot.
Right. I think it's also people. Important for parents that are worried about their anxiety levels of their kids, or kids who are worried that that they seek help. And do have a helpline. Chai FM does have a helpline, and that telephone number is 0800 24 24 36.
And I think it's important to know what signs to look out for. Mm. And if your child is, and I'm generalizing because we, you know, often the signs are a little bit different in the, you know,
for each person.
Mm. And for teenagers and for younger kids in primary school. But really what you want to look for is a withdrawal. You want to look for, you know, a change in personality. It could be that they get...
Is that per hour? Because we've got a daughter. Is that over a period, David?
That's over a period of time.
Okay. So it's not a different personality... Per hour.
No, that's something else. We can talk about that another time. Or at coffee, however.
Right.
But I think for me, again, so it's changes in their personality. Are they, if they're normally outgoing and they withdraw, is there a change in appetite? Is their sleeping patterns changed? You know, these are things that are really, really important to look out for. And would really tell us that there's something happening for our children and important to take it up with them.
Mm, mm. David Abramson, he's a psychologist in private practice, joining us every Thursday. Today we've been chatting not only about funeral songs, songs to play at the funeral, but also about the pressure on our children and on ourselves and on our schools when it comes to matric.